Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Poland. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And for calendar time, I encourage you to go to the LatahRecoveryCenter.org website and click on the calendar tab, and you'll see all the events coming up for the rest of this month, which there's not that much left of, and they'll have the May calendar up probably in a week or so. So you can see what's going on there. And I am joined today in the conference room / studio with Miss Denise, as usual. Hi, Denise.
Hello, everyone.
Hey. And today on the show, Denise and I are going to be talking about what in AA we call the fourth step. And I believe in your CR program, yep, you call it...
It's also a fourth step. It's inventory.
Right.
Yeah.
But they call it like...
Oh, it's a principle. Yes. Yeah. Principle four. Yeah.
Which is
openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, to someone that I trust. And you're working with a sponsor when you do that.
Right. And in AA, the simple form of the fourth step is you made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Yeah.
So, and I'll start out here reading from the AA Big Book, and I'm starting at the bottom of page 63 for those of you who want to join in online. I'm sure you have your big books out while you listen to this. And it says, after the... Previously, they had just discussed step three, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. It says, we next launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damage or unsellable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore. We were burned up. In our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, personal or sex relations, which have been interfered with? And then they show some examples of how to do it, like, I am resentful at Mr. Brown. The cause? His attention to my wife. Told my wife of my mistress. Brown may get my job at the office. And column three is affects my sex relations, self-esteem, sex relations, self-esteem, security, self-esteem. So it lists out against each one of those causes what it affects there. And I think really the basic idea is that when we go through these steps, they're meant to be a learning process. AA is called a spiritual program of actions. And this is one of the critical, well, they're all critical to an extent, but this one is maybe as important as any of them, or more important in my mind, because we go through and we find these, what we phrase as character defects. And we have to learn how to deal with them, how to be rid of them. In theory, that's what we're shooting for, because we go on through the fifth step to share that with others and in front of our higher power, and list them out. And then in the sixth step, we make sure we want to be rid of these things. And in the seventh step, we ask for them to be removed. But the inventory itself is really a critical bugaboo. And, I'll share a little bit. I'm going to want Denise to kind of lay out the similarities in your Celebrate Recovery program on this. But I'll go on and share later what that discovery process looked like for me in particular.
Celebrate Recovery's Principle 4 says, openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone I trust. And typically we're working with a sponsor. God tells us in His Word to get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice in Ephesians 4:31. This verse comes from Paul's letter to Ephesus. Paul is urging believers to live a life that reflects their new identity in Christ. He is calling us for deliberately choosing to remove these harmful behaviors in our lives. So it's similar, it's we're sharing about what is causing us to have this kind of thinking and behavior towards people or whatever that looks like. So you get to decide. I liked when you talked about when you're writing that out, our sheets are basically the same, right, as far as what you were sharing. And it's really good to be thinking about who is it that is getting a lot of time in your head, or what?
Right.
What events happened in your life or people who have harmed you? And then just taking some time to write those down. You can start in the beginning, back when you were a kiddo, or you can just start with what things first come to mind.
Right.
But I found doing this was so helpful to my recovery in the sense of not lugging that all around.
Right.
When I first did kind of like a quote inventory, I was actually in the Latah County Drug Court Program, and it was the MRT first step. And
what's MRT?
So moral. Oh, I'm not remembering the whole abbreviation for what that sounds for. Sorry,
we'll look
everyone.
It up. No
yeah.
Problem.
So in that first step, you're just going through 10 questions that in this part, you're actually just owning what you have done, what you are at fault for. In our CR inventory step study, what we're doing here in lesson 9 is we're talking about, people or events that you are having problem with that are causing you bitterness, rage, anger. You had talked before about resentments. That's what it
right.
was. So,
right.
I mean, resentments, I feel like, are a really big one for us. You
right.
know, we're having resentments towards, it could be work. It could be towards coworkers. Right. It could be towards family members. It could be towards, things that happened to you when you were a child. You know,
right.
there can be a lot of things that you have resentments about. And then those hurts, they have different kinds of behaviors or coping things that we do
right.
with that kind of hurt. And so as we write down our inventory and we're looking at each thing as we're going through our lives, you can start typically to see a pattern of where there was hurt and then where there was behavior that probably was destructive towards yourself mm-hmm. or towards others. And so in recognizing these things first, where there's these events that hurt or people did or said things to you that you can still remember, mm-hmm. being able to heal those, being able to share those with someone and saying them out loud.
So right. that and
they
resentment.
Can have some time.
Yeah. And resentment, just so people understand, a lot of people don't realize that resentment means resentment. It's re-feeling something that happened. And I think you perfectly phrased it when you said, when other things or people are living in your head.
Yeah.
You know, in AA, we talk about renting space in your head, you know, or letting people live rent-free mm-hmm. in your head.
Right.
It's the same idea, but the resentment is that feeling that won't go away. And usually it's, you know, the defect is not necessarily what you said. You know, if somebody is like, oh, you're just a nasty old hoe, and, you know, you got a resentment towards that, of course, instantly, and said, I'm not a hoe, you a hoe, mm-hmm. sort of thing. It's not that you said that is causing the harm to you. It's the anger that is living inside you that forced you to respond that way.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, you know, I recognize in myself, when you were talking about, you know, how we, when we refeel that and then we develop a behavior, it's like when someone down the road says something like, well, I don't think you're very good at this job. You know, your instant response or my instant response would be, I'm not a hoe, you're a hoe. You
right.
know, I mean, it's the same sort of angry yeah. response to something that made me uncomfortable.
And it could be triggered back to other events that happened before.
Oh, yeah.
And so if we're not talking about them and addressing them and sharing them and healing them,
right.
then that's just going to keep triggering it. And I could say something to you not even having bad intent, but it could trigger these other things that happened before.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, my goodness.
Right.
And so by doing this, by sharing these things and writing them down and looking at them and noticing the patterns and stuff, I found that my relationships improved, that a huge weight dropped off of me from mm-hmm. being able to share these with someone and actually being able to have someone that I trusted, like, listen, you know, and have compassion.
Right.
And so I will say it's really helpful to have someone that you trust, that's a safe person mm-hmm. that, you know, will, you know, keep this stuff between the two of you.
Right.
Because I think it's important for each person to share their own story, and that includes their hurts and
right.
different kinds of things. And so people typically that are sponsors or are good friends, you know, they've gone through these things already.
Right.
And so they know what it's like, and they've had that space with other people.
Right. Yeah. And even in the AA book, when we do the fifth step, which is laying out what we discovered in the fourth step, mm-hmm. they suggest it, you know, be with a close friend or a person, some person who has no, the expression is, don't have a dog in the fight. You know, they're not related to it. Or with a priest or pastor, you know, even right. if you're not religious, because they're very understanding men. So it can be anybody, really. But, you know, it's best, like you say, it's nice to do it with a sponsor, somebody who's been through the process and is able to help you understand and pick out and find those character defects. And we call it, like in the reading I just did, a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. And for a lot of us OCD alcoholics, thorough can be a really tricky word because we may want to go back through our entire lives. Well, if you were 18 and coming into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's not a real long thing. But me at age 40 coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, that would have been a lot of dirt to try and dig up. But the fortunate thing for me is when I go through these steps with another man, things will pop up in their inventory that relate to things that I left out of previous inventories. Unfortunately, we have a process. You know, I can either redo another four step at any time, that's fine, or I can look at it as a part of my 10th step work, which is, you know, reviewing my day and finding out if there's any amends I need to be that need to be made. And, you know, I find a lot of times that it comes down to the defects of character come down to like the seven deadly sins, right? Let's see, which are pride, greed, wrath or anger, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth. So in going through my, you know, finding these character defects and being able to tie them to one of those concepts, because those, quote, sins or shortfallings, which is what sin means, all manifest, you know, from different things. Like wrath is anger, and a lot of my defects of character were related to anger, and anger for a very bad reason, because it kept me from getting what I wanted. So I could be angry about not being able to have as many marshmallow peeps as I wanted, but then that's also related to gluttony. And so a lot of these things tie together. But for me, the bigger concept is to be able to look at that list and say, wow, I am very prideful. I am gluttonous. I am full of anger. Something related to every one of those seven deadly sins. And the process in the fifth step, fourth and fifth step, which in your the way you're describing it, they're almost combined into one.
So
and sort of they
I was going to say, actually, so inventory is focused on people who have harmed you.
Right.
And then, so at the end, it will say, and I was actually just going to talk about that and just say that we do the person. So the column of the person who is the object of your resentment or fear, mm-hmm. and go back as far as you can. And then it goes to the cause. Hurt people, this column, you are going to list the specific actions someone did to hurt you.
Right.
And then
like Mr.
Three,
Brown pays too much attention to my wife.
And
yeah.
Then column three, the effect. So in this column, you write down how the specific, hurtful action affected you in both the past and the present. Column four is the damage. So like social, security, sexually. But I also want to add that because this is the inventory lesson, the next lesson is actually about its spiritual inventory. Mm-hmm. So the next lesson is kind of more of what I was talking about with the MRT first step, which is owning all the stuff that you've done to affect people.
Right.
And so lastly, I just want to say that for the lesson I'm talking about right now, the damage, it's the column five, my part. So in the my part column, like if someone did something and they wronged me, I could still have a 2% part in that situation or more.
Yeah.
So you're going to talk about that. But here's the thing. If this is about you being in a, you know, domestic violence or, you know, something, all the serious things, like any type of abuse, in that last column where it says my part, you're just going to put no part. There would be
right. No...
You're not at fault in any kind of a way. So
right.
Yeah.
And, that brings up something else that when you were talking earlier, the great thing about working with the sponsor is that they can point out things in your resentment list, you know, like especially when it comes down to the resentments you have against yourself.
Sure.
Some of those are actually turn out not to be a real thing.
Right.
And here's the example that I had. Growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the late 60s and early 70s, as a young adult, my sexual activity was pretty crazy. And I hung with a group, men and women, who were just as wild as I was. I mean, I wasn't engaged. I wasn't connected to anybody. It was just kind of the free love paradigm that was going on at that time. And I thought in my inventory, actually my most recent one, I reflected on it, and I really considered that I was abusive and taking advantage of people because I have what's called an incredible magnifying imagination. You know, I really wanted to put the stuff on myself, and I thought, you know, yeah, you know, maybe this wasn't co-equal participation sort of thing. And in talking to my sponsor, he said, well, you know, did any of these people like say no or don't? And I'm like, no. And he said, well, that kind of indicates that they were into it and welcoming of it at the time as well. So you really don't need to make an amends for this. You really, you know, your resentment is really just something of your own imagination. Now, if you feel that, you know, you were being selfish about it, yeah, then there's something to work on there. But as far as a harm to someone else, that doesn't exist. So it's really tricky to sort out on those things. Like you were saying, you know, you may have had a small part in it, but you were not necessarily at fault. However, when we are harmed like that, we develop behaviors to deal with it.
We do.
Like shutting down. Like when I get in an argument with my wife, my first instinct is just to walk away, you know, instead of dealing straightforward with it. Yeah. It might be that when somebody calls you out on something, you want to punch them in the throat.
Right, or you're defensive or something.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So even though we had no part in it and you were clearly harmed by someone, there's still stuff there,
right,
that can be brought to the surface and learned to deal with. Child abuse.
Right. So the patterns, that's what I was saying about the patterns. Like if you start looking, you're able to piece together your life or a group of it. And something happened as a child. For instance, I lost my father when I was 7. And then when I became a teenager, it was all about dating boys because there was no, quote, male in my life. You know, that pattern developed into a lot of different things where I wasn't doing my side well at all. But it started, I think, because of that. You know, and so as you're doing things, you can kind of see where, oh, there was this event that happened or someone said something or someone did something. And then you can start to see the ways that you were living and identify how these patterns are walking out. You know, I was able, when I did all of mine from when I was in grade school all the way up to current a handful of years ago, I could totally see what my longest running behavior. You call them character defects. Biblically, they might be called, you know, they'd be called sins. And I could totally see. And I could see where some of them in my recovery, I was able to heal them and stop doing them. Right. And some of them had gotten better, but they were still longstanding.
Right.
You know,
right.
So there's still one or two that I definitely struggle with today that are back from when I was young. So.
Yeah. And both my parents were alcoholics. Surprise. Mm-hmm. I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
You know, I honestly think my view towards alcohol was definitely slanted by the way they used alcohol. I mean, I'm surprised, well, because I started drinking, found the joy in it before the wheels really came off of my parents' relationship, and the alcoholism really proved to be a horrific thing.
Yeah.
I had already, you know, dipped my toe in the world of alcoholism and liked it. So even though I witnessed the worst part of it, I was already sold, you know, on right. what alcohol could do for me, you know, and not wanting to see that, oh, this, what they're going through could happen to me. Mm-hmm. And it eventually did.
Right.
You know,
I think I remember being a teenager and just being like, oh, I would never let any of those things happen to me. I wouldn't ever be so stupid to do that. And
right.
pretty much every single one of those things that I said, they happened.
Right.
Yeah, the arrogance, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't even know if it's arrogance. I think that it's...
I think I was a little arrogant, speaking for myself.
Well, yeah, I can't deny that. Sometimes it's happens on such a base level that I don't think we even recognize
it
when it's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, that cuddling up with a boy and feeling that, you know, emotional connection, you know, of course that can lead a lot of different directions, but, you know, in this day and age, you know, with birth control being what it is and whatnot, people, you know, falling in bed all the time. And there's also kind of a culture of hooking up, you know, it's like this casual thing that I guess I understand in a way from being back way back when, but I don't see it that way now. And besides, that's going to be their first step to work out, not mine.
You grew up. Yeah, anyway, so I just would encourage people to think about this because, you know, things can't be worked on that you don't say out loud and won't share with someone. And from that, there can be a lot that you can recognize, things that you would need to work on, heal up, change, grow, whatever that looks like, but you get to decide.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just part of the work.
And writing down that list, like I said before, it can be as involved and as deep as you want. There's nothing wrong with putting something down and having somebody tell you, well, that really wasn't your, you know, because it does open up avenues for you to look at in your current behavior, mm-hmm. Not just what happened in the past. And hurts are hurts. Whether you choose to forgive someone or not for their behavior, I mean, that's up to you. I mean, I know that's the Christian thing to do. And even in AA, we say, you know, when people are harming us, we have to look at them as that they're sick people.
Yeah, I do want to say something about that. So it's my understanding, and this is the way I've proceeded with that. I can forgive someone from me to God for what that person did. It doesn't mean that I need to hang out with them or be around them if they're an unsafe person. So I just want to say, keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. We're not saying if you forgive someone that that just means the slate is clear. We do need to have common sense about stuff. It's just about not carrying that resentment around and being weighed down by it. It's just like, to me, it's like, God, I want to forgive this person, or if I'm asking for forgiveness, I'm unweighting it. I'm handing it over. I'm letting it go. And I can't keep carrying this. And that's what happened 11 years ago when I did the secular program and was able to own all the stuff that I had done. It was like a million pounds fell off of me after I got that all out. And yeah, it didn't seem like it would. It seemed super counterintuitive to share all that stuff, be really vulnerable and say that out loud to people. Because I actually had to do mine in a group setting, to like a group, a room full of people. So it's kind of hard. That's not what we're saying to do here. We're saying one person. But there was a gigantic weight. The process of thinking about answering those 10 questions about how I'd harm my family, myself, my health, my community, my workplace, my coworkers, all these different kinds of things, and like jotting that stuff down and then standing up and sharing it actually turned out to be immensely freeing. And it was the start of the change in my life. And then when I got into Celebrate Recovery, about a year, but it was a couple of years in my recovery until I took the CR step study and then started doing that. That was really great too, because then I was looking more at like, what were these specific kinds of things that happened in my life that caused harm? And then after that, owning in the next step. Mm-hmm. So our lesson 10, spiritual inventory, we're owning like how we harmed people and some other questions too. Right. So it's kind of just broken up into a couple of steps.
Right, yeah. Right.
And with your guys's, are you doing like how you've harmed people and how people have harmed you in both of those?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, it's kind of the discovery process in the fourth step, because how we remember things are re-sentiments. Mm-hmm. You know, we put them down. And like I said, sometimes we find we were actually harmed and didn't really have a part in it, other than the resentment and the behavior that follows along after that resentment.
And you were able to find that out because you did share that with someone.
Right,
talk
exactly.
it over. So that's the thing, is then we're not just living in our heads, not saying it out loud, getting anyone else's perspective.
Right.
We can talk it through.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the psychiatrists, psychologists do this, and they call it cognitive therapy, talk therapy, getting it out there in front. And we go on from, this fourth step and do the fifth step, which is the sharing with yourself, with God, and another human being, and saying it out loud and working through it and deciding, what is real and what is not. And that's another thing about alcoholics. It even says in the big book, usually by the time, we get in here, we've progressed to a point where we don't know the real from the false anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can have some, really wild feelings towards somebody that are totally not founded in truth at all. And you can find that out too. And then after that, you go through that process and identify those things, moving on to, after asking for God to relieve these shortcomings, we reexamine that list to find the people we have harmed. And it says we became willing to make amends to them all. Because there are certain people, that may have harmed us that we had a part in, who, we're never going to forgive. There's a story in the book about a fellow who borrowed money from a business competitor and then lied about ever having taken the money and, basically ruined this guy. And he decided, once he got into the AA program, he decided that he needed to make this right. So he, at, risk of his personal, financial well-being and standing in community and everything, he got up in church and basically confessed to what he did.
Nice.
In front of the whole crowd, not unlike your MRT, which is moral recon therapy.
Thank you.
There it is.
So smart.
I don't know where that bumped in. But anyway, he did the same thing. And in the book, the result was the man was well respected, the other guy was vindicated, this man actually helped him to restore himself, financially and whatever.
That's cool.
As part
That's
of his amends.
Yeah.
To him.
Right.
And amends is, just so people know, an amends is not saying I'm sorry. An amends is offering someone you've harmed a chance to change the ending of the story or amend something to the story,
right.
Which is hopefully are what we can do to make the situation right if possible.
Right.
And I've had that experience gone a million different ways from, well, not a million, but many different ways. I've done amends that should have wound me up, could have wound me up in jail, prison, actually. And had the person forgive me and realize that I would not be able to pay that person back if I were in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the best thing would be to,
right.
Let me let me make good on repairing the harm, which was a monetary harm. I've had other people that I've just had, brawls with over stupid stuff, and they've just said, hey, I'm glad you're not living that life anymore. I could see it was killing you, and I'm just actually kind of happy. So your amends to me is just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, living amends.
And again, maybe they're not willing to be friends with me.
Sure, right.
But they're willing to accept that,
right, your debt's
and
paid.
Offer that forgiveness. And interesting about forgiveness, you brought it up, and it's absolutely true. A lot of people think in order to forgive someone, you have to go look them in the face and say, I forgive you for what you did. And that can get you punched in the mouth more times than not. because they may not feel that, you know, they've harmed you at all. But forgiveness is really exactly what you said. It's asking God or your higher power, whatever you want to call it, to take the burden of this anger that you have towards a person and deal with it.
Yeah.
And just be rid of it. And you know, if you believe in a higher power, if you believe in God, if you believe in Jesus, and you believe in the teachings, then you actually believe that that is something that will be done for you.
Right.
If you ask for it in the right state of heart.
So just real quick, do we have a minute? So
sure, we got lots of minutes.
I think I was in my late 20s, and I was listening to, I think, a 700 Club or something like that. And from that, I decided to forgive. Then this person was never found. I decided to forgive who took my father's life. And I had been carrying that around for a really long time. You know, that really affected me, losing my dad so young, and all of us. It affected how we grew up. I mean, there's just so much to that, if you can imagine, losing a parent. And I just decided, you know what? Really, the most important thing that I would hope for was that this person got better and that they weren't still harming people. There's nothing I could do about the past and about what happened. I wasn't there. I don't know, you know?
Right.
And so I decided to forgive the person, and I then prayed for the person that I hoped that, you know, God would be able to meet them there and be able to help them change and to heal them. And that honestly, here I was carrying this around as if I were God, and I got to decide, you know, what happened to this person. I don't get to decide.
No.
You know, we have so much grace and mercy here on earth. I'm not given what I deserve. I've done plenty of things wrong. And it's by Jesus's mercy and grace that I get to be okay. You know, we do have consequences for our actions and stuff, but you know, it's not like we're given everything we deserve either. So.
No, and thank God for that. Yeah. Because.
Right. Yeah, it would not be a good scene.
No.
So I needed to stop playing God and allow God to decide what this looked like, because I wasn't going to know that person's heart. I wasn't going to know if they had changed by the time they died. Mm-hmm. And my biggest hope was just that they weren't still hurting people. That's it.
Right.
I had to let that go. And that was literally like a big part of my getting into recovery, was letting that go.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And, you know, similarly, you know, I went through that process with my parents, asking God to relieve me of the, you know, the anger I felt towards them for their behavior and their drinking, you know, understanding that I could not have changed them or, you know, made them live their lives differently. And also understanding from my own affliction with alcoholism that they probably really had no idea that what they were doing was harming the family in such a strong way.
Yeah.
I really doubt they understood that. Now, you know, I have family members that are dealing with that in different ways, and you know, two of my eldest siblings did not live in the home when the worst of that was happening. And in conversations with them, I have, I've discovered that their view of what the family dynamic was way different than what my next eldest sister and I experienced living in the house when they were really in the depths of their active addictions, you know? Forgiving them, giving it to God, and then realizing the reason you give it to God, which is you're not God.
Right.
And you can't have an effect on, other people to make them behave the way you would like to see it.
Right.
As sad as that is, raising children, I've never had children, but I've observed a lot of, you know, friends and even people in public, you know, a child in a grocery store throwing a tantrum on the ground, screaming and yelling, and And, you know, one person is trying to negotiate with them. And you know, my belief is you don't negotiate with terrorists. And then I see other parents that just watch them and people kind of stare at them and they're just like, you know, it's him, you know, just let him wear himself out. And, you know, eventually the child realizes he's not getting the attention he wants, either negative or positive, and, you know, stands up and goes about his day realizing that he has not won the battle. You know, that was me in my alcoholism when things wouldn't go my way. I was the kid on the floor kicking, screaming, yelling, insisting the world go my way, and it just doesn't work. You know, it says in the book, and this comes from page 60 of the big book down near the bottom, it says, the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody. Even though our motives are good, most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, and even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at his fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are all sure the world would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that, we think, is the root of our troubles. So, yeah, we can try and change people all we can, or we can accept people for what they are, where they are, and turn our resentments over to a higher power to deal with.
Right. We only have control over, well, basically we only have control over ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, what other people do and say is just not, that's not our responsibility.
That's right. You know? There's an old saying in AA is, what other people think of you is none of your business.
That's exactly. Because that can cause a lot of problems too. In my faith, it's about what does God think about me and what I'm doing. That's it. That's all that matters, because I can have an idea of what I think someone else thinks, but that may not even be accurate, and that's not really what matters.
Right.
The opinions of others. Now, that's not to say that's not something I struggle with, but.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, and me as well. I mean, it's quite often my delusion of what somebody else thinks, you know, will drive my actions, and I'm usually disappointed.
Yeah.
when that happens. Well, hey, speaking of disappointed, I'm so sad to say we're out of time.
Yeah.
But thank you, Denise.
Yeah, thank
for
you, Johnny.
your wonderful conversation and thoughts about how this fourth principle works.
Yeah, it's good talking to you too, and thank you to our listeners.
Great. And I'll close it off with the usual. You know, if you think you have problems with substances or alcohol or behavioral health problems, well, you do.